Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Peristyle Podcast. This is our recruiting blast version of the Peristyle Podcast, where we talk all about USC football recruiting. Of course, it is heating up, getting hot, lots going on. USC still hanging on to the number one class in the country. We're going to talk to USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez about the class and answer all of your questions. What's up, Gerard? How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm hanging in there for the first quarter of the recruiting stretch.
Yeah, it's going to be a crazy recruiting stretch through the All-Star Games, going down to San Antonio for a week for the Army Bowl. That's always kind of crazy. Lots of stuff going on there. And, of course, signing day. Absolutely nuts. Any reason to believe that this season won't be crazy during January and February?
No, those prayers were dashed back when USC lost to Arizona and then turned around and lost to UCLA. And then after that, you knew USC was just going to have to try to hold on to the commitments it had. They were going to still go out there and look at other guys and have some plan Bs, and USC tries to do it big. So, you know, it's Los Angeles. They're still going to get looks from top players around the nation. It's just a matter of how many of those guys are going to be serious, and is it worth, you know, necessarily gambling what you have with maybe some guys out there that are kind of long shots. But we're going to see, you know, we're going to see how it kind of starts to play out. The good thing for USC, and we talked about this at length in the podcast last week, was just the early enrollees and getting those guys in and kind of, you know, putting a little bit of a stamp on at least half of this recruiting class. Getting some of those guys in is a big deal, and it's going to kind of restore confidence to the rest of the class. And then from that point, you have something to build on after the dead period.
All right, well, let's get into it. We do have some questions. There's a couple big topics we're going to talk about. Some official visitors coming in. You've been teasing things in the war room for the last couple months, so we'll talk about that. But first, Eldridge Massington, four-star wide receiver, former commit out of Texas, decommitted this week. We actually got a Twitter question about it. I'll let you talk about the decommitment and then answer this question too. It's from @P_Luke. With Massington's decommitment, do you think USC will go after another wide receiver or hope for McQuay or Redfield?
You know, I think that's really where the targets are leaning towards another position. I think, you know, obviously with Redfield, he's a guy that can play on both sides of the football. USC has talked about that with him on his in-home visits. He's had two in-home visits the last 2 weeks with Kennedy Polamalu, and it's going to be a chance with him to maybe sit down with T. Martin, the receivers coach, and chat a little bit about maybe playing both sides of the ball. Max Redfield still, I think, leans towards playing free safety, and that's still the position that he wants to play, and in my opinion, that is his best position. You know, I often talk about Sue Cravens and how great of an athlete he is and how he can play receiver and he can play running back. I still think Sue is definitely a safety, and I think even more so Max Redfield is a safety. And Max Redfield's going to be coming in on this visit with, hopefully, for USC fans, Leon McQuay III. We're not really sure. We've heard some back and forth on whether Leon McQuay is actually going to make it in this weekend. I originally was told up until about, I don't know, Wednesday morning that he was a go and was hearing that, you know, he'd come out with his family and this was going to be a very big weekend for him because he's going to be an early enrollee and he's going to be making his decision here in the next week and a half. So that all of a sudden kind of changed. There seemed to be some issues with flights and some things that were going on, and I was hearing all of a sudden that he wasn't going to be able to make it, and they were going to try to postpone him to the week after, and he'd be the only recruit actually coming in the week of the, I guess it would be the 11th at that point. Now I'm kind of hearing again, no, he might be back out, and he might actually make it out with his family. So we're just going to have to, you know, kind of pin our ears to the ground and see what happens. But obviously a huge visitor, a guy, one of the few guys that's not committed, that has been to USC unofficially, that has been recruited by USC for a long time, has a bond with the USC coaches, really likes USC because of reasons other than football, because you look at the football season, obviously the disappointment if there are kids just looking at USC because USC is a winning name, well, obviously this season doesn't represent it very well. So with him, he wants to be a sound engineer slash kind of music major. He wants to work in studios. He produces his own music. He's a very, very talented student. He has a 4.5 GPA, one of those rare kids that actually has a GPA that matches his 40 time. So you're looking at a guy that's very serious off the field as well. He really legitimately has some interest academically in USC, and being in Los Angeles with the music industry and the entertainment industry would be a big draw for him as well. So that's definitely an aspect that kind of hangs out there and is something that USC can recruit around, despite, you know, the season and all the rumors that are swirling around about the coaching staff and about Lane Kiffin and everything that they're having to fight on with every in-home visit.
Well, the Massington situation, you know, you've talked about it on the message boards. Maybe you want to explain a little bit what happened there for the parrot to the podcast audience about Eldridge Massington and that decommitment, why this opens up one more spot.
Well, Eldridge Massington is a 6'3", 195-pound wide receiver that committed to USC over the spring. He committed to USC sight unseen and was just a big Trojan fan. And really, USC offered him, I think, kind of in the process of evaluations where he was starting to get a lot of offers. Alabama had come in and offered him, I think, just, you know, that morning when USC came in on an evaluation visit and turned around and offered him that night. He waited a few days. He decided to commit to USC. Over the summer, he did take an unofficial visit to USC. We saw him at a couple camps. He ended up going to the University of Tennessee for camp in late July after he had visited USC. It was kind of an odd thing. You take your unofficial visit to USC, you camp at USC at the Rising Stars camp, you're committed, and then all of a sudden he's going to Tennessee almost right after. So there were some questions about, you know, why are you going to Tennessee? The answer to that was his coach had another player at West Mesquite that he wanted to showcase, and Tennessee wanted to see him, but Tennessee also wanted to see Massington, and there was a better possibility of that other player getting a scholarship offer if Massington showed up and performed for them at the camp. So Tennessee kind of talked to the coach. The coach decided to go up there. He brought both players to the camp. From what I understand, and there's been, you know, kind of controversy as to this, USC didn't want Massington to perform at the camp, and I have to believe that totally. After going to the five-star challenge, after going to the opening, after going to the Rising Stars camp, he really didn't need to go to another camp, especially to a school where he wasn't committed and wasn't thinking about going to. And he turns around and does perform, blows out his knee, and to make matters worse, USC was kind of the last to hear about it. They had to hear about it through the media. So I think that kind of put him on thin ice with USC right there. And so USC, you know, but they didn't pull a scholarship offer. They said, okay, look, we need you to get in early. We want you to be able to rehab and finish your rehab here before you actually start running again, before you start, you know, doing anything that's really competition-wise going to put stress on that knee. So he's been going through training. He was taking night school. He was going through night school classes. He even told me he kind of stopped going to night school as much as he needed to during the football season just because of everything going on. And I think it basically caught up with him. He says he can still get in early at a school. He's still looking for a school to get in early. I think it's going to be one of those things where these schools that he's looking at now, his top list right now is going to be Alabama, which he says he's going to visit this weekend. He's got LSU. He's got UCLA. I think getting in early, he's going to have to probably get a quarter system. I just don't know if he's going to be able to get in early academically. He said that wasn't really, you know, the biggest issue with USC. USC just didn't have enough spots, mainly their senior class, I guess, was not necessarily all graduated. And so in terms of the total scholarship limit that USC is under with 75, he wasn't able to get in as an early enrollee. But I kind of tend to believe he didn't have his academics together, and that was going to play a big part. I think some dark horses for him are going to be more like ASU and a few other schools if he wants to get in early. If he decides to be a June, you know, enrollee, then I think, you know, he probably has much more offers, much more options. But I don't think USC is going to be one of them. I think USC and him are gone. He's actually still put USC in his list. He really loves USC, really wanted to go to USC, but it's one of those things that, you know, and with the limited scholarships that USC has, you can't go to a camp and say you're not going to perform, blow your knee, and then, you know, not tell anybody, not say anything, and they find out and they end up calling you because you're on crutches, you know, going around the sidelines. It's just one of those things. It was one thing after another. And so it becomes a guy that decommits, you know, kind of sort of quote-unquote. We could see maybe another one of those guys in the class. It's not necessarily the sky is falling. Like I said, I don't see USC necessarily having to run out and go find another wide receiver right away. There might be another guy out there that they want to look at. There's some names out there. We'll save those names for war rooms and, you know, future features. But I think right now it's definitely look at the safeties, look at the defensive line.
Okay, well, let's go to a question. That's Martin in Ontario, California. He said, is SC looking at any true center since more than likely Holmes will be leaving? He actually will be leaving. He's a senior. And does SC have any recruits that are considered preferred walk-ons? If so, how are you able to talk to them?
Haven't heard much about preferred walk-ons, and that's just something that we don't really cover until it kind of happens. There's way more going on right now than to worry about, you know, who's going to be a preferred walk-on. That's just not a priority right now in terms of trying to cover the recruiting, and you've got five-star guys that are out there and hearing all this negative attention from other coaches, and, you know, the class in terms of the core of it, the important part is those guys that right now are the four-star, five-star guys. You know, I don't want to say that just because it's like, oh, well, they're more talented, so we don't care about anybody else, because quite frankly, I think, you know, the better classes, the classes that turn out for teams are those classes, and I've said this ad nauseum, you pepper in those star guys. USC has a fantastic class right now. It's the number one class in the nation. But you could argue it's going to be one of those classes that can never live up to the hype that it has. USC's had some great classes, and you're going to have too many of those top-ranked guys can become ego guys. They can become guys that kind of take a sense of entitlement maybe with them when they come in. You know, they think, oh, we're the number one class, so we kind of have our run of the campus. They clash with the senior class. We've seen it happen at USC, seen it happen at Florida, seen it happen at various places. I think you definitely have the really good classes are those classes that you get those superstar guys, but you get, you know, maybe three or four of those guys, and then you bring in some role players around those guys that really fit your program and are able to just come in and do what you ask them to do as they develop within the program. You know, they're not going to be guys that make that big impact right away, but, you know, in a couple years, they start to make that impact. And we saw that with the class of 30 that USC brought in. You know, they brought in some kickers, a snapper, and some guys, and people are going, well, what the heck are they offering two kickers? Why the heck are they offering a snapper? But, you know, that those guys can end up being big contributors to the program down the way, and I think it was, you know, a good thing to go after some of those guys who are a little less off the radar. This class is completely on the radar. Every guy is a national guy. They've got 14 Army All-Americans. So it's one of those things that, you know, it's going to be more of like, you know, we got to protect what we have right now, and then we'll see if it's able to pan out and you have all these, you know, quote unquote can't miss type prospects, if they're actually able to come in and be those type of guys. But, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a handful for Lane Kiffin in terms of, you know, juggling the possible egos. I think, you know, character-wise, it's a good class. Personality-wise, it's a good class. A lot of good kids. You know, you don't get that right off the bat from them that, you know, they're ego guys. But when they get brought in together, sometimes it changes a little bit, and you definitely kind of have to form it a little bit and be on top of it.
The true center thing's interesting, too, because now we've learned that Abe Markowitz may not be back. We're still not sure what's going on there, but Lane Kiffin said there wasn't room for him. He still could be a walk-on. We're trying to find out more about that. There's more scholarship rules and all this kind of stuff. It keeps getting – we think we figure it all out. It seems to get more complicated. So
there's always something. Yeah. You know, there's always – and it's USC football, and so – there's never a dull moment. We always laugh and talk about it. There's just never a dull moment. And, yeah, this is something that's kind of popped up now, and we're all trying to figure out, well, what the heck is that? Well, how is it? How could you not have a Markowitz come back when you don't really have a center? I mean, we saw what happened when Cyrus Hobby came in against Stanford. I mean, USC was just, they were not prepared. It was just not the right fit. Now, that's not necessarily totally the Cyrus Hobby's fault. I mean, a lot has to go on the coaching, too. I mean, you guys have to understand that these kids, they only learn so much in a couple years, and Cyrus Hobby is what? He's just a redshirt freshman. So, you know, that's, it takes a little bit of time for guys to get acclimated, and obviously he just wasn't prepared, and it really affected the way the team played and the offense played. I mean, you have to think if Cullen Holmes plays in that game against Stanford, USC probably wins because USC just couldn't, I mean, they could barely snap the ball at one point in that game. So, I mean, it was like, offensively, there was just no way they were going to be able to score many more points than they got just in that first half. And from that point on, it was just, oh, man, hopefully they just don't turn the ball over and give Stanford easy scores. I thought the defense really played valiantly in that game. And so to the true center question specifically, is there a true center on the board? I have to say Khalil Rogers is that guy. Or excuse me, Khalil Rogers. Khalil Holmes and Khalil Rogers always, you know, Khalil.
Okay.
Khalil Rogers, who's a 6'3", 305-pound, he's a guard from Eastern Christian Academy, which is the same high school that Kenny Bigelow goes to, 4-star, number one ranked guard in the nation. We've seen him in person. Here's the thing about Khalil Rogers that I love, and this is, again, almost goes back to what I was saying as far as the role players and peppering guys in that are not necessarily a highly ranked guy. In this instance, he is a highly ranked guy, at least by Rivals. There's a lot of other networks and a lot of other services that really don't think that much of Khalil Rogers. But I think this is a guy that when I watch him play, I think there's no way he's going to get punked the way that we saw Khalil Holmes and, unfortunately, Cyrus Hobby in the Stanford game get punked. He's just got that attitude and that way about him that he's not going to get blown up. He may not be the most spectacular guy in terms of offense, offensive blocking, pass blocking. He's, you know, kind of built like a fire hydrant, not the most showy, long-armed, 6'5", you know, just that physique guy that you go, wow, man, that guy's a, you know, he's going to be an NFL superstar. No, he's not that guy, but he is just dominant, and he's really got the attitude and the confidence and that hard-nosed, blue-collar way about him that I feel like that kind of leadership and that kind of confidence, you know, if it's just plugged in and used the right way by USC, I think that's a guy that could definitely come in and play center for him. I think he has the head on his shoulders. I think he has the composure. Things don't get to him. You know, we saw him at a lot of camps calling out just everybody. Just, you know, he just goes out there and anybody that looks like they might be good, he wants to go against. And if he gets beat, which we didn't see very often, I think I saw maybe twice in the whole time I saw him do one-on-ones, him get beat, he comes back and wants that guy again. 2 out of 3, 5 out of 7, 10 out of 8, whatever it is. He come on, I want to keep going until I'm going to get the better of you. And he ends up doing that, you know. So I think he's a guy that's a possibility. Maybe there's a JUCO possibility too. Sean Harlow, 6'5", 275-pound. He's kind of an offensive tackle for San Clemente, but I think USC would recruit him more as a center. There's guys like J.D. Hennett from Fountain Valley High School, 6'5", 265 pounds. There's guys out there that USC could recruit as a center. They're not going to be the high 4-star, 5-star guys, but there's a possibility that they could bring them in and it could open up another spot for, you know, a guy that would be a center, because we've seen, you know, they don't necessarily have a guy that jumps off the depth chart is, oh, well, he's going to be great. He's going to step in for Khalil Holmes and be a sure thing. You know, Cyrus Hobby, maybe people thought he was going to be that guy, but he's got a long ways to go. And if Abe Markowitz is not coming back, yeah, then they really, I mean, they're going to have to go with somebody that's going to be young. So they got to have somebody in this class, because we haven't seen anybody on the roster at this point that's going to be a guy that's going to come in and be dominant.
Let's go to Tim. He says, will the announced retirement of Monty Kiffin have a negative effect on the recruitment of someone we already mentioned, Leon McQuay? I understand Monty was very closely involved in his commitment. It seems like USC was in the lead.
I think it does have somewhat of an impact. This is one recruit where Monty Kiffin was actually the regional recruiter and happened to be the position recruiter for Leon McQuay. So you kind of have a double, you're talking to him from a position standpoint, you're recruiting him from a position standpoint, and then you're also going there and visiting and being involved with him from a one-on-one standpoint, probably knew his family very well. And Monty Kiffin had a great personality. I mean, people talk about Monty Kiffin and what the defense didn't do, this, that, and the other, but you have to look at the recruiting side of things. And while Monty certainly wasn't out there, you know, beating the trail like Ed Orgeron or T. Martin or some of these other coaches that USC has on the staff from the recruiting standpoint, he does have a great personality. He's a very kind of gregarious, funny. He's very interesting. He's different. He's a lot different than Lane Kiffin is, you know, in terms of personality and kind of how he approaches you. And, you know, we saw it a lot in the interview that just went up with Chris Hawkins. If you read that, you kind of see, get a little bit of a mental picture of Monty Kiffin kind of away from, you know, the press box, away from the coaching box and how he is as a recruiter and a personality. And obviously in Tampa, and that's, you know, the part of the country where Leon McQuay is from, he's a huge looming figure. And obviously he's still, I think, a positive for USC, and, you know, he's definitely going to be around. And McQuay, you know, if he does visit this weekend or the week after, whatever it may be, you know, Monty Kiffin's still going to be there, and he's still going to say great things about USC and still say great things about Lane Kiffin. So that's not necessarily a big deal. But not having there in the future, yeah, there's some impact there just because they have a coach that they have a good feel for and they have a good trust for. And I think that kind of was, again, what Chris Hawkins was saying as well. You know, this was a guy that we felt was looking out for me, recruited me, kind of stood on the table for me to get an offer. And when that coach leaves, you feel like maybe you don't have a little bit of that champion on the coaching staff. So the other coaches have to make up for it. They have to, you know, step in, and Coach Marvin Sanders has to, you know, build that rapport. There's going to be a lot of questions about who's going to be the new defensive coordinator. What is the system going to be? What are the coverages going to be? What's the philosophy of that new defensive coordinator? And I don't know how many of those questions are going to be able to be answered this weekend by Lane Kiffin. And that's, you know, this is really going to kind of come back to Lane Kiffin as much as the assistant coaches with these official visits. USC has not had a official visit yet, not one. They didn't have any official visits during the season. And that's, you know, it's not completely odd for USC. Usually they have very few, even goes back to Pete Carroll. But I think this is the first time they have not had one person actually officially visit. So this is the first weekend. So Lane Kiffin's definitely got to step up. He's definitely got to give that kind of state of the union of the program address to all these kids, show that, you know, there's a direction with the program. This is where we have to go. This is what we want to do. This is how we're going to accomplish it, and really set some certainties for the program. Because if he's starting to check out and he's starting to fade a little bit and the season's over for him and they kind of take that, you know, attitude with him on the recruiting trail, and the kids are going to see right through that. They'll see right through Lane Kiffin. So, you know, that they have to have that confidence in him, and he has to have that confidence in himself that, yeah, we had a bad season, but you know what? The season before that, we had 10 wins, and, you know, we weren't supposed to do that. So, you know, we can come back from a bad season, and scholarships, no scholarships, what have you. You know, this is an adjustment period. Nobody's gone through this period before of sanctions. You know, we're going to be okay. This is USC, and you accentuate the positive. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it's going to be – this weekend is going to be – a pretty good test is to, you know, how these kids come away from their meetings with the coaches and the feel. And you're going to be able to tell, even reading between the lines, you know, are things copacetic at USC? Are they good at USC? Are they positive? Are these kids coming away saying, yeah, we're going to be okay. We're going to be fine. And you'll tell that immediately from the recruits that are committed. I think more than just the recruits that are out there that are targets, the guys like McQuay that are coming in, the guys like even Redfield. It's going to be more about, does Chris Hawkins come away feeling good about USC? Does Sua Cravens come away good feeling about USC? Kylie Fitz, you know, all these guys that are coming in early on visits, are these the guys that come away feeling even more confident and glowing? Because if they're not, then you got a problem.
All right, let's see. Greg in the OC wants to know, when is Darius Rogers going to be a member of the football team? He wanted us to talk about some scholarship math too, taking Silas's red spot. We're not going to go into that. There was a lot of It's pretty much the same as it's been before. We'll update that as more stuff comes to light. We'll keep the scholarship chart updated, but maybe give people an update on what you've heard about Darius Rogers.
Darius Rogers, I believe, is actually on campus, and he's been taking meetings with the team. I don't think he can actually practice yet, but I think he's been at practice. You could verify that for me, Ryan, because I have not been at practice this week. But on Twitter, according to him, he's actually been around the team and is allowed to watch film and kind of hang around a little bit, and he's going to enroll with the team. I think it's January 10th. Is when he comes in and is officially a student, but he's already been around the football team and been in film and kind of doing some things with the football players. So he's pretty much a part of the team at this point.
Okay. Let's see. Anthony had a couple questions. First,
I guess you have not seen him at practice.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I forgot about to mention about that. Yeah. No, I did. There's only been one ball practice. It was on Wednesday and we did not see him. It was at the Coliseum. And there was only like, it was really not that well attended. Only two parents were there. There was a lot of the seniors that were in just like regular clothes coaching. I did not notice him there at practice. It doesn't mean I mean, he wasn't there. He could have been there, but I didn't see him there.
Okay.
So we'll see, yeah. So sorry about that. I should have gave you the update there. But Anthony wants to know, he says, two scholarship spots left. In a perfect world, who does USC get between Redfield, McQuay, Goodman, Trey Johnson, and Carl Lawson?
Wow, totally Redfield and Carl Lawson. That's an easy question. Redfield, because he's the local kid, you keep him away from Notre Dame, that's big. Leon McQuay doesn't go to USC, probably goes to Florida State. So you go after Redfield all day long, twice on Sunday. And Carl Lawson, just because he's a huge stud, and he's probably the most dominant player that I've seen the whole year. So that's an easy one, yeah.
Okay.
Rapid fire.
No, that's awesome. His second one was... And what is the deal with Sebastian LaRue? He has really come off poorly with a lot of his comments in the course of the recruiting process. Is he this year's Jadon Mickens? Is he worth a scholarship spot over the guys that SC has in their top two or three? That's from Anthony.
Well, yeah, Jadon Mickens. It's the Jadon Mickens month, maybe, for USC. Massington kind of took that role as well. Yeah, there's definitely a possibility that LaRue could kind of fall into that category. We're going to kind of wait and see. We're just kind of waiting to see kind of how he takes the process. He goes through visits. He's been enamored with UCLA more than he's, saying publicly. And he's trying to just kind of keep cool and keep his foot in the door with USC. But he's definitely going along and wants to be interested in some other schools. And I think with LaRue, the biggest thing is that he wants to play receiver. And he feels he can come in and play receiver as a true freshman. My personal opinion is he can't do that at USC. I just don't think he's good enough. I think he's definitely a better corner. That's going to be the position that he should play in the future, at least with USC. I don't think he can't play receiver at the college level or the Division I level. I think he can. I think he can play that position in the Pac-12. I just think USC right now, talent-wise, I don't see him coming in as a true freshman being able to play. I think he would have to redshirt. He'd have to be a guy that would contribute later on. And I don't think he wants to do that. I don't think he has the patience for that. I think he has a view of who he is as a player, and that's a guy that's a slot receiver. And I think, even with this class, I take Steven Mitchell over him all day as a slot receiver. So I think it's just one of those things that's going to work itself out. And, if he wants to play receiver, he's going to go to Washington State or UCLA or somewhere else. If he wants to kind of come in and really just be an athlete and just put and go and play whatever position the coaches ask him and, just not have an ego about it and just say, all right, I'm here to help the team, then he could still be maybe a part of the class. Maybe he hangs through. It's one of those things where we have the predictable losses, guys like Massington and then those guys that, maybe Eddie Vanderdoes, he took that official visit to UCLA. He's going to take all five of his official visits. He's going to visit Notre Dame. His last official visit will be with USC. That was kind of something that was rumored and got all twisted and turned. But he will go to USC last for his official visit. There's, a lot of crazy stuff that can happen. I mean, like I said, we were literally just getting through the first quarter of this last home run stretch.
Certainly. One more thing on LaRue. I got to see him in person twice this season during the football season. Played Inglewood. Didn't have a catch, it was kind of a running game. It was a weird game. Santa Monica ended up winning it. But I talked to him afterwards. I don't know. He couldn't have been more positive about USC. And He wanted to win a Heisman there. I mean, he was like high on USC, and I've definitely seen some of his comments since then. Also saw him play Sarah, where he did have a few catches, but he was going one-on-one with Adoree Jackson, the 2014 five-star kid out of Sarah High School. And, you know, Adoree got the better of him, but, Sarah just had a better team, and it wasn't all that good. I mean, LaRue had one, I think it was a big punt return, a kick return that was good. You know, he had a few catches, played some good safety and cornerback and stuff, but it was tough. I didn't get to talk to him specifically after that game too. It was tough though, seeing him on the field. If your team isn't all that good and you're not catching a lot of balls, you're supposed to be a receiver and just, you don't have a quarterback that's getting you the ball that much. I can see where some of his frustration would settle in.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Well, you already got your thoughts on that. Well, we got one last one. This is
I had no more. I couldn't say anything more than that. It just
I like the kid though. I mean, he's cool, and he was also really positive after. I think it
after
was
the Notre Dame loss.
Yeah, the Notre Dame loss. He was trying to be positive there too, and we're not allowed to talk to those guys when they're on campus. But seemed like he was. Happy. He's happy to be around USC. Wants to be there, like you said. But it just depends on what position, and we'll have to see how that turns out. But Ryan Nick, one last one, has a question. He said, "If GM can give us some names to watch out for in the 2014 class, that USC has a good chance to get in the state of California and also around the country." So that's kind of open ended, but maybe some of the top 2000.
That's a very, very open ended question.
Yeah, we'll end on it. That's our last one. But some of the top 2014 kids you think that USC is big on right now.
Well, we've actually already put out, which is probably the earliest we've put out, our target list for the next class. So we have the 2013 target list, which we updated last week, and then we already have the 2014 target list already out. So that actually shows you all the players that USC is recruiting and guys that are targets and will be targets, at least for USC. Breaks them down kind of into Rivals 100, Rivals 250, to some of these guys that are projected in terms of their rankings. It's going to be an interesting year. I mean, the number one quarterback right now in California is certainly Keller Crist. Keller Crist is a 6'2", 215-pound quarterback from Palo Alto, California. He's actually the son of Geek Crist, who coaches quarterbacks at the San Francisco 49ers. So, from that side, you kind of go, well, this guy's got to be going to Stanford, of course. Maybe Kevin Hogan is a guy that he's looking at, and there's some, depth chart kind of questions that pop into his head. It kind of seems to be a two-horse race right now between USC and Stanford, and it could kind of go any way. You've got Max Brown coming in at USC, so that's a guy that's going to be, right in front of him. But if maybe Max Brown doesn't play right away and Wittick ends up winning that job, it opens up things a little more for USC. But right now, I think Keller Crist is kind of the guy that is the guy that stands out a little bit for us as far as quarterbacks. There's one guy that's kind of off the radar that we really liked. We saw at the IMG passing tournament last summer, a kid that's actually already committed to Vanderbilt from California. He's from San Jose, KJ Carter Samuels. A big kid, kind of, looks like a big outside linebacker type. Has a good arm. Just a guy that, we didn't really get to see outside of that one tournament, but liked him a lot at that tournament where he's actually been projected as a 250 guy in the 2014 class. So that's a possibility of a guy that maybe, Chris ends up going to Stanford, USC, if they want to get another quarterback in that class, which I think at this point they're probably going to have to. There's another possible a name to kind of keep an eye on. One guy that we just did a story on who's going to be one to watch is going to be Royce Freeman, who's a 6'1", 215-pound running back from Imperial, California. Now, Imperial, California is an island unto itself. I mean, you have Imperial, and then you have kind of Blythe, and you have some of these kind of desert communities that you just never really hear about that are a part of Southern California. Well, he lives out there, and he runs the double wing tee in Imperial and has run for an amazing – I mean, he's literally run for about 6,000 yards and 60-plus touchdowns in the last 2 years playing for Imperial. So that's, his sophomore and his junior year, he's run for over 2,000 yards each season. He ran for about 2,500 yards this past season and about 32, 34 touchdowns. So – you're looking at a guy that obviously, you know, competition-wise, he's a good five steps above everybody he's playing against. But you look at him and you see that size and the speed that he runs with, and evidently he's a pretty good clock guy too. So he's a guy that's going to be interesting to watch. You know, I mean, USC is always looking for that franchise back, and this kid likes USC. He's been to USC, went up there for the Notre Dame game, talked to the USC coaches, and I think most importantly, he likes the offense. He likes the offense that USC plays in, and he wants to be part of that pro-style offense. The pro-style offense that, you know, the peristyle is always, you know, arguing about, and, you know, we should get away from the pro-style. We need a running quarterback. We need to run the spread. But the pro-style still continues to recruit itself because it's a pro-style offense. Hence the name. And then all these kids, you know, they want to play in the pros, so they want to be prepared for an offense and be able to make that transition as smooth as possible. And that's something that USC obviously offers. So he likes USC a lot. Just an intriguing kid right now, you know, kind of a guy that just got insane numbers, great looking kid off the hoof. But, you know, it's hard to necessarily gauge, you know, when you're playing down there in I don't know what the South Valley, the San Diego Valley. I'm not really even sure what you call that area, but Brawley, Calexico, it's definitely competition wise. We've got to kind of figure out how good he really is. And I don't know if we're going to know that until much later down the line. You know, receiver wise, Robert Woods could be leaving. Marquise Lee could be a guy that will be, you know, draft eligible next year. Not a fantastic year for receivers right now. We're kind of looking at it, and there haven't been a lot of guys that have popped off the radar. I know a lot of people like Makia Quick, who's a 6 foot, 180-pound, probably a flanker at the next level, receiver from Fresno. He came down to the five-star challenge. We saw him. He was okay, didn't do anything spectacular. He played really more defensive back than he did receiver, though, and his receiver tape is pretty good. He's a fairly good player. We kind of have to see if USC is ready to really go up there and recruit Fresno hard again, since T. Shepard and Deontay Greenberry. I think the guy that's got, you know, a lot of momentum right now at the receiver position, maybe other than Quick, is Juju Smith, John Smith from Long Beach Poly, who's about 6 foot, 190 pounds, also plays safety. And when you look at him, you kind of see that number nine, and you go, oh, you know, another Marquise Lee type. And that's what a lot of comparisons have been made. I don't know if he's quite as athletic as Marquise Lee. You know, Marquise was a guy that was a great track guy, played basketball, was really a basketball player before he was a football player. So you had a lot of raw athleticism with Marquise Lee. Just because you got a kid wearing number nine, he's playing safety, he's playing receiver, doesn't necessarily mean he's Marquise Lee. But, you know, watching his receiver film, he's got great awareness. He's got great spatial awareness, great hands, makes some spectacular catches. It's tough to be a really good receiver at Long Beach Poly if you're not a guy like DeSean Jackson, who just basically you can just, you know, take a little bubble screen and take it to the house. When you're a guy that's really more of a vertical guy, it's tough because Long Beach probably just does not throw the ball that well downfield. And so this season, you know, he's kind of done more with less in terms of his catches, and he's made some spectacular catches, and it's definitely going to be a guy to watch. He's definitely a guy that's kind of got that momentum right now. We talked about Adoree Jackson at Sarah. You know, I don't know why USC hasn't offered him yet. He's about 5'10", 180-pound. Cornerback. We've got him as a five-star. He's played up to that level. I mean, the guy is playing well as a quarterback, which is, you know, not a position that you can really evaluate a whole bunch from a high school level, because you're not seeing him play against really top-notch quarterbacks. And very rarely, you know, he got to at least see Sebastian LaRue, you know, did a really good job against Sebastian LaRue, but he's not seeing a lot of Division I receivers either. So, you don't really have to have that combination of a good quarterback and a good receiver to test a good corner. So we're not seeing a whole lot of that. But we are seeing Adoree Jackson take his abilities to special teams and doing some things on offense. And that, to me, is really where you start to see, okay, this kid really has that athletic ability. He is that elite talent because he's able to be a threat on punt return, on kick return. And when he does get his hands on the ball as a defensive back, he's taken, you know, interceptions back for touchdowns. So another guy that's also, you know, I think a long jump is his event in track. He's a great long jump guy, so he does have that athleticism out of just football. So you know he's not just okay, you know, he runs that 4.4, ha ha, but he's really a 4.6. No, he's a legitimate all around great athlete. So he's a guy. They've got Dwight Williams on that team, who's about 6'1", I don't know, about 200 205 pounds, maybe. I don't know how he's put on that much more weight this season, but kind of a Deion Bailey-type linebacker who I really like. I think he's got another guy that's just a good athlete, got a really good feel for the football, doesn't make a ton of sudden violent plays. I think that might be something that USC's looking at. They want somebody maybe a little more physical near the line of scrimmage. He's a little more of a finesse skill guy around the line of scrimmage, but a guy that, you know, could be playing safety really right now. He's that kind of athletic, and he has that much of an ability to just to be around the football and play well in space. There's guys that we can go on and go on. I think maybe one guy to throw out there would be an out-of-state guy that USC's looking at and has a pretty good relationship is Vincent Jackson, a 6'2", 230-pound outside linebacker from Tampa, Florida. He's going to be one of those kind of national recruits. We're going to see who kind of comes in on him as time goes on. If, you know, he starts to get Alabama and Florida, you know, some of those schools have been a little hesitant to offer him because he plays for Jesuit, which is not necessarily the biggest program down there in Tampa. But USC came in on him early, like they did with Nelson Aguilar, like they did with Leon McQuay. Obviously, it's those Kiffin ties in Tampa. And he's a kid that is real big on USC. Came to the Rising Stars camp as a junior, so he's been there unofficially. He's built that bond with USC. He's been to Los Angeles. And he's a guy that's going to be one that you're going to want to watch as time goes on, and could be another one of those Florida kids that USC is able to steal, coming in 2014, which right now seems a lifetime and a half away.
Exactly. Sure, it certainly does. All right. Well, that's our show for this week. Thanks for coming on, Gerard, and dropping all the knowledge bombs on us, sharing all your insights. Always great stuff. We'll try to keep doing these every week, heading up to signing day, and I'm sure for a little bit beyond. But thanks again, Gerard, for coming on.
Thanks for having me, and we'll see what happens after next weekend. I think everybody's going to be pretty amped up to hear about all the reviews from the dozen or so recruits they're going to have for this big recruiting weekend here, December 7th, December 8th.
All right. Thanks again, Gerard, and everyone else. Thank you very much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. We'll be back next week. You can check out the show then on Monday. We'll talk with Coach Harvey Hyde and Dan Weber again. Until next week, take care. Thanks very much.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.